My guest at this time is Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee. He joins me now to explain the thesis behind his family agenda for legislation that he hopes Republicans in the House and Senate push forward to not only strengthen the American family, but strengthen the economy. He says, really, they're intertwined and you can't separate them. And, Senator, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, as always, Greg.
Just flesh that out a little bit more. You gave this speech a couple weeks ago now at the Heritage Foundation that suggested that the strength and health of the family has got to be a major concern. And if you focus on that responsibly, you'll also be helping the American economy, because you can't look at the family without also seeing the economic impact of helping them strengthen their foundation. Explain the connection there.
I believe family is the fundamental unit, the fundamental building block of society. And too often, as conservatives, we've tended to look at the family as exclusively a social unit, a social unit that has economic implications. But I think it's equally important to view it as an economic unit with social implications. So everything we need to be doing in Washington should be focused on the family, on making sure that government is at least not harming the family, making sure that the government is not doing anything to discourage marriage and child rearing, and not doing anything to single out, target, or punish or harm the families as our fundamental unit of our society.
Let's take a look at just a couple of the issues that you referred to in that speech. There's obviously several that you referred to, but starting with education, you said one of the problems, of course, is that higher education, the cost just keeps getting higher and higher and higher, and sometimes that's for parents trying to help their kids pay for college. Sometimes parents are still getting their degrees themselves. What's the best way to bring those costs down?
I think the best way to bring it down is to look at the way we accredit institutions of higher learning. And if we look to expand the number and the nature of entities that are accredited and allowed to participate in federal higher education funding programs, I think we could achieve a state of play in which there'd be more competition. With more competition, you generally have prices going down instead of perpetually up, as we have had, and you also get improved quality. I think there are a lot of opportunities, for example, with massive open online courses for people to get a high-quality higher education experience without the traditionally very high cost attached to the traditional brick-and-mortar higher education learning experience. Look, the brick-and-mortar institutions are always going to play a role. They're always going to play an important role. We're not trying to make those obsolete, and we're just trying to say that our economy is expanding, and there are new opportunities out there, and those new providers of higher education opportunities need to be given the chance through our accreditation process to participate in these federal programs.
Senator Lee, another one that you bring up is infrastructure. I think both parties agree on that. I think what they would mean by infrastructure certainly might differ. Your goals and what the president had to say the other night in his State of the Union address might not be exactly the same. From a family perspective, I know you see this as improving ways and cutting down time so parents can get home and spend more time with their kids after work and so forth. So how do you hope to bring folks together on that issue?
Through my Transportation Empowerment Act, we would help moms and dads get home to their families sooner, so allowing them to spend less time in gridlock traffic, by shifting more of the funding over to the states, meaning we would lower the federal gasoline tax from 18.4 cents per gallon down to 3.7 cents per gallon, and allow the states to collect and spend the differential of 14.7 cents per gallon entirely on their own. When you do it that way, Greg, you expand the spending potential of each dollar by 20 or 30%, because all of a sudden you don't have all these federal regulatory costs that go into this. We want to connect where people need to work with where they want to live, and that's what this bill would do.
Another piece of legislation that you're actually introducing with the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, refers to giving employees the option of being paid for overtime or having comp time that's kind of flexible. So if they do need to leave work before the end of the day, there's a way to keep track of that and work it to their best advantage. Talk a little bit more about the bill and whether you think that's going to find some bipartisan support.
Yeah, so you're referring to the Working Families Flexibility Act, and as you mentioned, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is the lead co-sponsor on that with me. And what this does is to give the comp time alternative, it makes that available to private sector workers. Currently, that's available only for government workers, such that if an employer wants to offer comp time and an employee wants to receive comp time, they don't have that choice, even if they're both interested in doing that, because federal law precludes it. We think that's wrong, and we think that if it's okay for government workers, it ought to be just fine for America's private sector employees as well. And that's what this bill would do. So that if somebody wants to work, an extra hour or two or more 1 week, they can take that time off the next week if they want to go attend their child's ballet recital or baseball game.
Senator, some folks might look at that co-sponsorship from Senator McConnell and be a little bit surprised given the different tactics that you and some of your friends in the Senate have had with the leadership in the past over, say, the 2013 appropriations or the Cromnibus just a couple of months ago, and say, wow, they're coming together. Has there been, now that the Republicans are in the majority, kind of a healing over the tactics that have been used in different debates in the past? I know you're serving in some sort of council role to the majority leader as well. So just talk about how that's kind of evolved.
Well, first of all, we're thrilled to have our new majority leader. Mitch McConnell has opened up the Senate process, and he has restored the open amendment opportunities historically available to senators. And members of both parties in the Senate are benefiting from that tremendously. As a party, as senators from the same party, we don't always agree, but our areas of agreement far outnumber our areas of disagreement, and this is one of the countless areas in which we agree, so I'm happy to have his help.
One last issue before we let you go, Senator, and it's one that almost became part of the Constitution about 20 years ago, and that's the Balanced Budget Amendment. It actually got the two-thirds in the House. It came one vote short in the Senate back in the mid-1990s. Now you're bringing this back again, because obviously we're looking at continuing a skyrocketing debt. What type of reaction are you getting to this, and what specifically would the amendment do?
Well, first of all, you're exactly right. The American people want a balanced budget amendment. They want Congress to have restrictions placed on its ability to spend money, and in particular on its ability to impose economic burdens on future generations of Americans, including Americans who have not yet been born, and including others who have been born but aren't yet old enough to vote. It ends up being a form of taxation without representation. We reject that kind of approach in America. And so what this would do, what my balanced budget amendment would do, Senate Joint Resolution 2, is it would require Congress to use a supermajority vote in order to approve any budget that's not balanced, in order to approve any increase on the debt ceiling, in order to raise taxes, or in order to spend more than a specific defined percentage of GDP, 18%. We think that if Congress wants to do any of those things, it ought to have to secure a supermajority vote in both houses of Congress in order to do it first.
Senator, whether we're looking at some of these pro-family bills that we've talked about, or the balanced budget amendment, which would obviously require 67 votes to move on, if you've got the 54 Republican votes, but in a lot of these things you're going to need 60 to get them passed, what's your expectation here?
You know, it's always hard to predict, and I don't like to make predictions at the outset. If you say, oh yeah, we'll get 60 votes for X, then those people who doubt that will say, oh, you're being naive. If you say at the outset, oh, there's no way we'll get to 60 on this, then you doom your own legislation. So in each case, what I like to do is try to explain what the proposal is, lay it out there, get most or all of my Republican colleagues behind it, and then move forward with the hope and the expectation that we'll bring at least a few of our Democratic colleagues along with us. Because it's really hard to argue against these things. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to argue against allowing private sector employees the same benefits that government workers have, the same opportunity that they have to access comp time.
We'll certainly be watching how this ambitious agenda unfolds. Senator, it's always good to have you with us. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.